Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. I'm very excited today because I have a very old friend of mine as my guest. Her name is Kavya Ryan. She's Director of Human Rights and Communities at the OSCE Mission in Kosovo. Hi Kavya, how are you?
Hi Mirta. Great, thanks.
It's so good to have you on this podcast. Thanks for accepting the invite.
My pleasure.
So Kavya, let's dive directly into it. I would like to know, what did you dream of becoming when you were a child?
Wonder Woman.
Wow.
When I was a little girl, I wanted to be Wonder Woman. And perhaps there's some version of that that still remains.
Excellent. And can you let us know if anything, like, was it something in your family or was it something in your environment that drove you to Wonder Woman?
I read the comics, so that was it. I saw the stories, I read the stories. I remember thinking, she has black hair and so do I. It's a funny, simple thing. But also the strength of her character and the compassion. Probably those two, three things I realized right away.
Excellent. And the theme about her hair, that rings actually a bell with me too, because she was one of the superheroes that had actually dark hair. So right. I could relate to her as well. That's why I'm actually smiling and laughing. You mentioned compassion and strength.
Yes.
Were those values that your parents kind of, you know, gave to you or considered to be good values, you know, in your family upbringing or something?
By osmosis, yes. We didn't talk about these things in so many words and conversations, but it's what I witnessed from my parents, for sure. And I think that's the best learning. It's the one subtly, slowly over a course of years. So yeah, I would say yes. I did get that from my parents.
Excellent. Now, Wonder Woman is a woman, as her name says. Mm-hmm. Did your mother have a type of kind of, you know, was she a type of role model for you where you could also see some of these characteristics in her?
I think so, yes. My mother had a very demanding job and she was very civically and socially engaged and also very much focused on the family. So I never saw her as someone who had to choose between these various roles. And that was, I think, a big role model for me, that you could actually do it all, but there would be compromises along the way in order to juggle and handle everything.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Now, for our listeners, actually, Kavya and I know from a while ago, actually, when we were still students, we went to the Diplomatic Academy Vienna. And obviously, that's a little bit, it's quite a while away now. But Kavya, so at the time you were studying, you were a student, I was a student. Mm-hmm. From that time to today, now you are today, you are Director of Human Rights and Communities at the OSCE in Kosovo, which is also special. Mm-hmm. You know, how was it from the time, you know, that we met to end up now in this, you know, high-ranking role?
So you're asking about the journey from there to here?
Yeah. What do you want to share?
Sure, sure. Well, a couple of things. One is, for a lot of students of international affairs, they don't necessarily end up in international affairs. So I would say I'm one of the few that actually did. So that's a direct link from our studies, that
yes,
the same subject both of us study. For example, you're in the pharmaceutical industry, and that's very common. There are a lot of people who studied what we did who went into all kinds of fields.
Yes.
So that's one part of it. It's just I'm actually working in the field in which I studied. But as far as the journey, very organic and surprising. I think it would have been tough to plan my career. One thing led to the other. It would have been hard to know I would have been in Kosovo at this point, you know. So I think the best way I can describe it is I've always been led by my interests. So I always just looked at what sort of role, what sort of job, what did the competencies look like, and I just took things that interested me, and one thing led to the other, and I've enjoyed everything I've done. Kosovo is a very fascinating place. Human rights is fascinating, and I still feel I have so much to learn. So that maybe is surprising. I think when I was a student, when we first met, I thought that at some point I would just learn less and know more. And I think that's something that I've learned, that you're just constantly learning. And in fact, if you're constantly learning, that's a good thing. You're not getting too static or stuck.
Thanks. What I like about what you said is the fact that I think it's less actually about planning your career, but much more about following your curiosity and where you believe that you have some capabilities. And I don't know if you would agree with me, but one of the things that I'm seeing now is that it's less about the title, but much more about what the role contains, what it's going to be about, and hence, not necessarily today we would need to be looking at titles in order to build up a career, but much more as to where can we leverage our capabilities to to the highest level, and then from there, actually, it's kind of organically. Even though I must say, every time you say it, but also I have spoken like this, I always smile a little bit because I know more than organically, it's just a lot of hard work.
Absolutely. Organic doesn't mean easy. Absolutely. A lot of hard work. A lot of, sometimes in your career you take risks. I have often and consistently been out of my comfort zone, and my learning curve has always been steep. So those are not easy situations to be in, Every time I got to know a role really well, I would start to look to leave. So that's not always comfortable, but it is rewarding.
Yes, and I think it also brings with it the fact that you are constantly being challenged, and because you're challenged, you're not bored, and hence you are exposed to more things and it opens your horizon. So I think there is a lot of upsides, but as you say, it's paired with a lot of risk and with a lot of hard work. So thanks for sharing that. Now, throughout your career, I imagine you have been supported by people. Have you come across good leaders? And if so, can you share what made them
Good
good
leaders.
leaders?
So I have a I'll answer this question in two different ways. I've learned just as much from good leaders as bad leaders. So I have learned a lot about leadership from every leader I've come into close touch with. And I've had a share my share of leaders that had much room for improvement. But it was good because I learned how I felt on the other side of it and what I didn't want to do. So both. So that's the first part, is just that I've learned from both good and bad leaders. The good ones, I would say a few things. First, a leader that gets a lot of buy-in before making a decision is a very good leader. And that can be difficult, require more time, more resources. So, but it's usually worth it, because if you spend more time getting buy-in for a decision, a major decision in a unit, an organization, then it makes the post-decision process much easier. So that's one thing I've really learned. The other is leadership style. Some of this is subjective. You know, different people like different things. But I've worked in many different environments, and I can say that there are some qualities that are just generally useful, helpful. I would say kind of gravitas or charisma, that helps a lot if people can get excited when they're around you and inspired. And it's hard to put your finger on sometimes. Charisma is hard to put your it's hard to put one's finger on, but I know it, and you know it when you see it.
Yes.
And when you have it, it greases the wheel. It makes everything run smoother, and people just want to talk to you. They want to listen to you. And I've been around leaders who have a ton of charisma. Communication is very important. You can have a great idea and not communicate it well. So it's that second piece that's so important. So to be a good communicator is to not only express yourself well, but make sure it's understood on the other side well. And I've seen, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have necessarily that skill.
Would you say that the second part is also the capability of being able to listen? Because when you realize actually if someone understood you,
yes,
it's actually when you're listening to the other and yes, not only listening to yourselves while communicating. So for me, it's kind of, it goes together. Very often I realize someone is not very good at communicating, not because, you know, the language is not good,
right,
but more because it's not a two-way street, but rather only a one-way street.
Absolutely. I've often felt that way in various conversations. So when you're deeply listened to, you know it, you feel it. And it's important as a leader and as a manager, both, to listen very deeply, to really hear what others are saying, but also to make sure, sometimes by simple things like just repeating what a person says back to them and mm-hmm. say, did I understand you correctly? Is this, you know, those simple things can really confirm that you've understood what they have said. But that's an important quality of a leader, is to listen.
Yeah, I think it goes back also a little bit to probably what we both learned at the time is also, it's one of the tactics of mediation, right? When you ask the question back, when you say, have I correctly understood that what you're saying is?
Correct.
And then the other person tells it back to you, and that's why you realize, okay, well, that's actually not what I said. Mm-hmm. I was intending to say something else.
That's right.
But it's also, as you said, I think it's interesting that you mentioned time-consuming for the kind of getting a buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I feel it the same way, and sometimes I am kind of attracted to kind of, you know, take the fast road instead of take the one that takes a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I would agree with you, the engagement of people.
Mm-hmm.
is far higher
mm-hmm.
when you take the time, and actual implementation of whatever it is you're doing normally is faster.
That's right. So you're front-ending the effort to get greater efficiency later. And I've learned that through making mistakes and realizing it the hard way. Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
When you think about, because you also mentioned leadership styles, which I think it's an important one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there is a specific difference between, you know, with respect to male and female, or do you think that's just most of the times a personality thing?
I would say that I have noticed a difference. I have noticed a difference, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't get differentiated at the personality mm-hmm. level as well. So maybe the answer I would say is both. The best way I can understand the gender aspect of this question is that there is a different socialization of the two genders, and that necessarily affects everything, including leadership style. So that's, you know, that's the through line.
I think it's interesting that you put it in those words, because that's one of our favorite topics.
Yes.
Right? We talk a lot about socialization, we talk a lot about the programming taking place, and I think it's right. I think even with those men or women that may display more the characteristics of the other gender,
mm.
there is still an underlining upbringing that may kind of, you know, impact also the leadership role, other leadership style,
mm.
and so on. So I agree with you. It's very difficult, even when we want to be extremely kind of, you know, detached
mm-hmm.
of the gender
mm-hmm.
aspect, you can still feel sometimes there is more of something in one side and maybe less. But then again, at the individual level, I must say, I've also seen a lot of female leaders behaving very,
sure.
very strongly in the sense of like men,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you can also be strong without being the type of, let's say, more directive, right?
That's
management
right,
style.
Directive. This sort of reminds me, I remember a literature course I took at university. And there was one part of it where our professor was telling us female writers versus male writers, and they had actually found certain qualities and characteristics of each. And I was very skeptical when I heard this, and I thought, let's see, can you always tell? I'm sure that in some cases you cannot, but when we went through the specifics of it, you could always tell.
Isn't that
It
incredible?
is incredible. And that, and if you think about that for writing, it must be the same for everything else.
And probably it hasn't changed, right? We were
Probably
talking about
not.
this yesterday, and we're talking about how much progress has to be in or not, or how much has it changed for those coming after us. And there is already a kind of a gap between us two, you being younger, but I think there is still so much to do. And that would be my next question. When, now you have had different roles in international organizations, how about the gender equality there? Do you feel like because it's international organizations, there is a higher awareness, there is more chances for women, or that maybe in international organizations it's kind of more like a protected world and women have equal chances? How does it look in your environment?
I think that one may assume that in an international organization, which is, like for the OSCE, for example, we have very strong values around gender. There are, it's written in our core materials. So one would assume that the situation is better and that the awareness is higher, perhaps in some ways, but I would have to say that not necessarily. Not necessarily. And I have friends in all sectors, in all parts of the world. And sometimes I've been extremely impressed with certain human resources policies in Fortune 500 companies. And I think that's far more advanced than in the public sector. So a lot of these assumptions, I think it makes, they don't necessarily hold true. And I would still say that in the environment I'm in, there's still a long ways to go. There's still not parity with women in leadership positions. I'm still a minority in terms of, gender balance. So we still have a long way to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the impression I had is because, and I'm aware that there is no parity in international organizations, but my thinking was that maybe the diverse environment of having people from different cultural backgrounds, different upbringings, different educational backgrounds as well, that that kind of would help for this kind of issue, let's call it, because it's an issue, right? The lack of parity,
Yes.
that would help or push maybe women to the better side of the topic, but it seems like there is still a lot of work to do.
Yes, and when you have international organizations, you have people coming from very different cultures, and a lot of cultures have very different norms, and all of that also affects the common environment. And so that, there people come from their cultural backgrounds and their own personal values, and that can range a spectrum, right?
Yeah, what you're saying is it's not because you decide to work for an international organization
Exactly.
that just because of that you will kind of let go of your own beliefs and habits and traditions.
That's
So
right.
even though you may like to work in that environment and you like the diversity, you may still bring all of that with you and not necessarily want to relinquish it, but rather cherish it as a, identifier, as a differentiator.
Yeah, very much so. That's exactly it.
That's interesting because also it would tell a story about the fact that why sometimes it's not so easy, even not talking about gender necessarily, but about minorities, right? Like in Switzerland, where we are now, it's like we have a lot of people coming from different backgrounds. Nevertheless, it's still a struggle to get to the place where we can say everyone is abiding to the social rules of Switzerland, because every person that comes here brings with her or him a little piece of their own culture, and obviously that also impacts the society at large.
That's right. That's right. Do you remember the book? It's now, I don't know, a couple of decades. I'm not even sure. A couple of decades old, The Clash of Civilizations.
Yeah, we had that at the Academy.
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's why I had to read it for the second time. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So there's always going to be a clash when you have competing norms and values and
yeah. Definitely. For those that are listening, Kavya is referring to The Clash of Civilizations from Huntington.
That's right.
If they want to pick it up. I think it's an interesting read, and actually it's one that it's still very kind of modern and contemporary. There is a lot of what he said then that is still applicable today, even though things have...
We've moved a long way since then as well, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about the gender issue. In Kosovo, do you experience a different environment than in other countries you've lived before?
Yes. I mean, every place is unique, mm-hmm. for sure. I have been in Kosovo for less than a year,
mm-hmm.
so I would say the jury's still out. I'm still very much observing and learning.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is a unique environment.
Do you feel like it's a good place as a woman in leadership position to be? It's like, is it easy or is it like a bit more kind of... You know, I don't know how people react to it.
Mm.
There is still countries where today it's and to tell you the truth, when I go with a male colleague to an event, people always assume that he is the one with the higher ranking position.
Right.
And then we always have this awkward moment where he or the person realizes, oh, I'm actually not addressing the person that I'm actually interested in addressing.
Mm-hmm.
So
that happened to me once in Kosovo. So that exact example happened. I was with a colleague and there was the same assumption and then it had to be clarified. So I suppose that's unfortunately universal.
Okay, yeah. So Kavya, now maybe just going back a little bit to, you know, to some time ago, because that's also what we met each other. One of the questions I like to ask my guests is, what type of advice would you give yourself if you could go back to, maybe not to the time of the academy, but just afterwards, like your 20s, beginning of your 20s, what is it that you would tell Kavya and say, Kavya, do this and that, or don't do this and that, if you look back?
I remember this tweet that I read. It was something like, I'm paraphrasing, be the mentor you wish you had. And that's my advice. Be the mentor. Rather than looking for that elsewhere, simply to start being the person you wish could lead you towards your goals. Like, be the mentor you wish you had. I think that's profound. I almost wish I had read that tweet, or this is pre-Twitter. I almost wish I had heard that, because it's just a different way of thinking about it.
It is in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it is a lot of what we are hearing today. It's also, and some criticize that, because I've heard this when I talk to other people, is like, it also takes a little bit away the responsibility from society or from your employer. So it's a little bit more of, you know, do it yourself. I like it, not so much because of the do it yourself, but I like it in the sense that, first of all, being a mentor includes being having some empathy, having compassion, and also having patience. And I think for me that resonates a lot, because when I was in my 20s, I had zero patience.
Mm-hmm.
I had very little compassion.
Mm.
And, you know, so that kind, for me, if I try to picture what that means, for me, it's not only kind of role model based, you know, oh, don't look for the person to lead you, but much more about also, do actually, you know, show all this type of, actually, kindness, to put simply. Show this kindness that you would show to a mentee,
mm-hmm.
to yourself,
mm-hmm.
and from that place of compassion then strive to achieve what you want to achieve. So that's what resonated with me, but I can see how people could say, well, it's an easy one, right? It's all about do-it-yourself. That's not how I understood it.
Exactly. It's very empowered. So it's, there's different components to it. You're exactly right. There's an empowering component where rather than looking outside, you're looking more internally. Let me try to think, because when I read that, why did it resonate so much? It was empowering. It was also, I think, about taking ownership for your own journey. You know, like you have to develop the skills that you feel you don't have, appreciate the skills you do. You mentioned patience. That's a tough one. For me, I'm always impatient about everything. It's an exercise to be patient and wait for things to give things the time they deserve. But that's the thing, you know, when you have to be your own mentor, you have to identify your failings, your strengths. You have to have a plan of action for your failings, and you know, it's a process, and you have to take it seriously, like you take anything. So I think all of these things is why, this is what I would say to those who ask me what advice I would give them.
Yeah.
I would kind of turn it around.
Sure.
You know.
I think I really like the aspect of our shortcomings being looked at rather by a mentor than by ourselves, especially female. Can be sometimes very demanding as to their shortcomings, and I think that looking at it from a mentor perspective would soften a lot.
That's true.
The way you speak to yourself and the way you push yourself to achieve something, or even to define something, right? Because the 20s are a kind of an age where you define a lot of things and where you try to be tough with yourself and take the right decisions somehow, right? Take the right path.
Yeah, we're very hard on ourselves. I don't know. I know that you and I are hard on ourselves.
Yes.
So I'm not sure. I can't speak for, you know, our entire gender.
Yeah,
but I know
say
that we
universally,
are.
But
right.
but at least our two generations seem to be very hard
absolutely
on ourselves.
Absolutely. And you mentioned compassion. Like compassion for oneself is saying, okay, that was a mistake. Now learn from it. Don't dwell on the fact that it was a mistake. That's very important.
So I think we can conclude now, because first of all, the message, this last message that you've shared, I think it's very, very powerful and it's very deep. I think it will give a lot of our listeners a lot to think about. And I also like the fact that you can see it from different angles. It's not something only that's related to you, but it's something also that this kind of, you know, second person that you are, your alter ego that comes along during your entire life.
Yes, like Diana and Wonder Woman.
Yes.
to bring it back to the beginning.
Exactly. So, you know, and that's something I really like.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people, and now something comes to my mind, is actually, to close actually this conversation, was that someone told me, the moment you will learn to appreciate being with yourself, you will not feel alone nor lonely anymore. And this to me was like so deep, because at first I didn't understand. I was like, well, I'm with myself all the time. But it's actually, there's a difference between consciously being with yourself, with your alter ego, and accepting it and embracing it and being compassionate, all the things we said. And I think that, for instance, for me is still kind of something I strive for. I constantly remind me of this fact, like, it's so important to be okay with yourself.
Absolutely. And that's always a challenge.
Yeah.
Especially when you're younger, but it gets, hopefully it gets better.
I think it gets a bit better because we accept making mistakes a bit easier.
That is definitely true.
But it's but as you know, and I know very well, we're still kind of
when
we make a mistake.
True, we're very generous to each other. So, like, when you tell me a struggle, then you know, I'm very, you know, the it's I'll say the same thing to you that you say to me that we should probably be saying to ourselves.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So with that, for our listeners, I hope you enjoyed the conversation of today. I think this completely goes into the direction of leadership, where it's really about thinking, right? We don't want to convince anyone about our views, but rather just widen the horizon of perspectives. And I think for those that will get to know Kavya through this podcast, follow what she does, because she's an amazing woman. She's very successful. And top of that, you won't see it, but she's very beautiful as well. So thanks for being here today. Thanks, Kavya, for accepting the
My
invite.
pleasure, my pleasure, Mirta.
And see you soon.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I hope you liked this episode of Leadaching in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon.